Good morning, good morning, good morning. My name's Aaron, and I am thrilled that you decided to join us this Sunday. We're actually in week six of a journey that we've been on through the book of Proverbs, titled The One Thing. And basically what we've been doing is looking at the one thing, and this is rather audacious of me to say, but there's one thing that if you can figure out what this one thing is, it can actually make you better at everything. And that one thing we've been talking about is called wisdom. And just so we're working from the same definition, wisdom really is knowing what to do in the vast majority of situations and circumstances that we happen to find ourselves in as human beings that, frankly, the moral rules just don't address or apply to. That's what wisdom is. And so last week, what we did is we started a section of this series that's designed to help us understand wisdom as it relates to relationships. And the reason why I think it's great is that applies to everybody in the room. There's nobody in this room who doesn't have some form of relationship with some other human being. Be it you're married to somebody, you're somebody's kid, you're parenting someone. We are all navigating relationships. And what you and I know about relationships is that they're complex and they're complicated, right? And so one of the areas of life that takes a ton of wisdom if we're going to navigate all the complexity and all the complications and all the challenges is relationships. Proverbs has a ton to say about relationships. And the reason why I think Proverbs speaks so openly and so frequently about relationships is because they're vital to our lives. I don't know if you've ever thought about it like this, but I think that everyone in some way, shape, or form is one relationship away from being made or broken. So in other words, relationships can make us or break us, and because of that, they require incredible amounts of wisdom if we're going to make it through them the way that we want to. And so Proverbs, another thing that it says about relationships is this, that if we can't understand how relationships tend to break and the means by which we can actually repair those relationships, we're going to run into all kinds of problems in life. And so here's what the book of Proverbs tells us. It tells us that a wise person understands first and foremost that all relationships are in constant need of repair. A wise person also understands the components of relationship repair. And then thirdly, a wise person understands the heart behind relationship repair. And what I mean there is the reason why you would even seek to repair any relationship whatsoever. A wise person isn't going to be shocked when they hear that relationships oftentimes need repair. And so with that, let's go ahead and get to our first idea this morning, that relationships need constant repair. Ha ha. Bet you didn't know that. Bet you didn't see that coming. But to show you what I mean, I want you to turn with me to Proverbs 10, verse 18. And here's what you're going to find there. It says, "The one who conceals hatred has lying lips, and whoever spreads slander is a fool." So before we move forward, I think it's important that we pause and define this word hate. And whatever's coming to mind right now, it might be like just outright anger and rage towards another person. What I want to do is challenge your working definition of hate, because when Proverbs uses the word hate, it has something far more subtle and far more potent in mind than any definition that I've ever landed on, and maybe the definition that you have for hate. Hate, according to Proverbs, is simply ill will. And here's what that really means. Hate is when you begin to find your happiness in someone else's unhappiness. That's what hate is. Take a peek at Proverbs 24, verse 17. It says, "Don't gloat when your enemy falls, and don't let your heart rejoice when he stumbles." Here's one of the best ways that you can detect whether or not you have ill will towards somebody in your life. You like it when things don't work out for them. Or you have this weird sense of hope that someday, somehow, things are eventually going to come crashing down in their life. And you're not just hoping for that, but in some weird way, you actually find that kind of satisfying. That's hate. That's what Proverbs is talking about when it talks about hate. And here's what Proverbs shows us. This is what we naturally do when we discover that we don't like somebody or we discover that we're dealing with hate. We conceal it. We tend to hide it from the other person because we don't want to let them know about it or how we really feel about them. But then we also try to hide it from ourselves. We're reluctant to call it what it really is. And you might think I'm exaggerating here. So I'd like to show you that this isn't my take. Because if I'm exaggerating, so was Jesus. All right, you guys remember the most famous sermon that Jesus ever delivered? It was called the Sermon on the Mount. And in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus took some time to address this very issue. And I want you to hear how he handled it. Here's basically what he said. Jesus said that something as small as calling someone a fool or hating them in your heart is the equivalent. It's no different in the eyes of God than murder. What I believe Jesus was really getting at here was that hiding hate, what it does is it creates the conditions that will allow it to grow and to fester and to become something that you never intended it to be. And here's the point. You might be able to hide the hatred that you have for another person from yourself, and you might even to an extent be able to hide it from them, but what you're not going to be good at is hiding it from other people when you talk about them. In some way, shape, or form, it's always going to come out. And the way that Proverbs tells us that it comes out is through slander. And slander, regardless of what your definition of slander is, maybe we often think about it as a false report. You ever thought of slander as maybe a false report? But what Proverbs is really getting at is that slander isn't just a false report, it's a bad report. And here's what I mean by that. Slander is any communication that's designed to diminish the person you're talking about in the eyes of whoever you are talking to. It's literally designed to diminish how people see that other person. That's what slander is. And when you think of it like this, I think you'll agree with me that you can see this kind of thing happening all day, every day, in some way, shape, or form. I mean, think about this scenario. You see somebody who's ruthless at work. They think they know it all, right? They're full of themselves. Tell me it's not almost automatic for you and I to think or begin hoping that someone's going to come along and just put them in their place. Or that someone's going to come along and set the record straight. And look, if that's where our minds go, what Proverbs tells us is that we're slipping into hate with the people at work, with the people in our families, with the people at our church, with the people in our community, with the people who are doing all the political things that they're doing, with the people in our world. And if that's what we're doing, here's what Proverbs tells us, that we're absolute fools. Because slander doesn't just destroy the other person, it actually destroys us. And if you want to see how it destroys us, and the person that we have those kinds of thoughts or feelings about, all we have to do is take a look at Proverbs 24, verse 28. Here's what it says. It says, don't testify against your neighbor without cause. Don't deceive with your lips. Now, why in the world would anyone ever feel the need to testify without cause or to make up a storyline about another person and then go conveying it or communicating it out and about town? Why would anyone want to do that? Well, the answer to that is in verse 29. It says, don't say I'll do to him what he did to me. I'll repay the man for what he has done. So let me paint a picture of what this verse is really trying to show us. Someone wrongs you. You ever been wronged? Yes. Everyone's been wronged in some way, shape, or form. So someone wrongs you. Shoot, somebody might even come to mind as we're walking through this little picture here. But here's what happens. It hurts, right? And then the next thing is it develops into something that you didn't want it to be. It develops into hate. And then we run the risk of obsessing over that person's downfall to the degree that we're willing to make up stories about that other person. And even if what you're saying may be true, what we tend to not do is paint a full-orbed picture of the other person. So think of it like this. You tell a lie, But you're not a liar because you're multifaceted and there are layers and there was a reason why and you're protecting them and it was all about them and not about you. But if someone else tells a lie, they're immediately a liar. Right? So we want to be seen as multifaceted, but we're willing to reduce other people to their lowest mistakes. And so what Proverbs is really telling us to be is watchdogs over our own hearts for hate in our own hearts. Because otherwise, we end up becoming the very thing that we hate without realizing it just because we feel justified in what we're doing. And we can't always see this happening because I think there's this power in hate that you can't always see. And the irony is this, that we end up becoming defeated by the very things that we're trying to defeat because we're fighting hate with hate. You fight fire with fire, you just get more fire. Come on, somebody. And this concept, I think, explains why relationships really are in need of constant repair. So far, we've identified a problem. But we all know that if you identify a problem and you don't have a solution, that's not helpful. So let's talk about what we can do about it. And I want to show you four things. I'm calling these components of relationship repair. There are four of them. The first one is resist superiority. The second is release liability. The third is repay evil with good. And the fourth is confront out of love. So the first step in relationship repair is to resist superiority. Take a look at Proverbs 11, verse 12, which reads, "Whoever shows contempt for his neighbor lacks sense, but a man with understanding keeps silent. A gossip goes around revealing a secret, but a trustworthy person keeps confidence." So there's one variable. I believe there's one variable that causes hate or ill will toward another person to grow and to fester, and it's this. It's superiority. It's feeling like you're better than they are. And here's how you can find out if you're slipping into superiority in your own life. You've probably said things like this. Somebody has a slip-up. Maybe makes a mistake. Could be large-scale or small-scale. And in retrospect, because you're super brilliant and your retrospective vision is always 20/20, you say something to the tune of, "I would have never done that." Come on, somebody. Or you say, "I can't believe they did that. How could they? How could they believe that? How could they think that?" Right? And here's what we need to do. Here's what we need to understand. It's only when you come to grips with the reality that you're really no better than anyone else. And frankly, it doesn't matter how buttoned up you are or how put together you are or how well you've figured out everything in life. You're no better than anyone else. And given the right circumstances, we're capable of making the same mistake. And until you resist your own feeling of superiority, you can't really repair any relationship. And according to Proverbs, it's that sense of superiority that's the root cause of all the hate and resentment that we've experienced in our lives. And so I think it would be helpful to pause here for a second and talk a little bit about where that comes from. And it's kind of difficult to see in English, in our English translation, but if you look at verse 12, it says something that kind of helps us understand this. It says, verse 12 says, "Whoever shows contempt for his neighbor lacks sense." So in the original Hebrew, lacks sense really just means heartless, like absolutely heartless. And when the Bible talks about the heart, the Bible really is talking about the core of your being, the seat of the mind, the will, the emotions, the whole nine yards. And when Proverbs talks about someone being heartless, it's really talking about someone who's walking around with resentment and hate in their heart toward another person. And Proverbs makes it very clear that there is nothing surface level about this kind of issue, but this is a core issue. There's something wrong at our core if we have hate and resentment in us about another person. It runs deep. And the core issue that I think Proverbs is really getting at here is that in some way, shape, or form, we as human beings, we like being in charge, do we not? We like calling our own shots. We like making our own way. And ultimately, what that really points to is we kind of like assuming the role of God in our own lives. But there's this other thing at work in us that kind of triggers when we get into that mode, because every time we assume the role of God in our own lives, on some level, we realize, whether consciously or subconsciously, that ultimately we're just elevating ourselves to a position that we have no business elevating ourselves to. We're ultimately trying to play a role that we're not qualified to play. And so what ends up happening is we go through life feeling deeply insecure, feeling like we've always got to prove it, we've always got to convince other people and ourselves that on some level we're okay. And so here's what happens. We see someone fail, and that self-justification trigger gets pulled, and we start looking down on other people, all in a pathetic attempt to feel good about ourselves. Tell me you haven't been there. I know I've been there. Or when someone wrongs us, we immediately see them through the lens of their failure. And every time we treat people this way, we're destroying them by reducing them to their worst mistake, something which they are not. And we're destroying ourselves by elevating ourselves to a place of superiority that we have no business occupying. And according to Proverbs, that is the most foolish thing that you can do in the context of any relationship. But what wise people do is something markedly different. They cut this kind of thinking off at the pass. And they look at other people, even people who have failed them, people who have hurt them, people who have done things that were wrong to them, and they choose to keep silent. Because deep down inside, the wise person knows that given the right circumstances, they could make the same degree of failure. So if you want to repair your relationships, you've got to start by first resisting your own superiority. Secondly, you have to release liability. And this is what Proverbs 24:28 is getting at. It says, don't testify against your neighbor without cause. Don't deceive with your lips. Don't say, I'll do to him what he did to me. I'll repay the man for what he has done. Are we not so used to keeping score in relationships, it's kind of out of hand? I mean, tell me you haven't kept score in your relationships, and I will high-five you before I leave here today, and I'll also tell you that I don't believe you. And here's what keeping score in the context of relationships really means. All you're trying to do is get out of somebody what they got out of you. All you're trying to do is get back from someone what they took from you. Anybody else got kids in the house? All right, you've probably encountered your bathroom sink where the toothpaste, all of it, not some of it, all of it is squeezed out and it's just sitting there waiting for you. All right, you and I both know you can't get the toothpaste back in the tube. And you can't take back what you want to say to that kid, so you don't say it. So you move on. You can't get the toothpaste back in the tube. Right? And so here's what ends up happening when we're trying to make people pay for what they've done to us. Frankly, it's impossible because you can't make somebody hurt the way that you hurt. And you can't really get back what somebody took from you. So your only alternative is what Proverbs is alluding to. You hold a grudge. And here's what a grudge looks like. There's a picture of it in verse 17:9. It says, whoever conceals an offense promotes love. That's not the picture of it. The picture of the grudge is in the second half of the verse. But whoever gossips about it separates friends. And so the word conceal might not mean what you're thinking. And this proverb is specifically designed to compare and contrast concealing an offense versus gossiping about it. And gossiping about an offense means you're reliving it. You're talking about it to whoever's willing to listen. You're dwelling on it with yourself, with others, and you can't stop reminding the person who committed the offense of the offense that they committed. And you're only doing this because you're trying to make them pay. You're trying to make them hurt like you hurt. You're trying to make them experience what you experience. And all you're doing ultimately is retaliating against the person rather than trying to repair the relationship. Concealing an offense is the opposite of that. And here's what it means. In a basic sense, it just means that you refuse to hurt the people who have hurt you. And the moment you stop trying to do this, the moment you stop trying to exact the cost from people for their offenses is the moment that you begin releasing them from liability. And here's what's going to happen when you do this. It's going to be painful. And the reason why it's going to be painful is because it's costing you something. But here's what the alternative is. The alternative is that you become twisted by the very thing that twisted you to begin with. And so releasing liability really just boils down to one simple yet profound thing. It boils down to forgiveness. And you'll know you've released somebody from liability when you get to this place where you're hurting more for them than you have been hurt by them. And so the first step toward repairing relationships is to resist superiority. The second step is to release liability. And thirdly, you've got to repay evil with good. And the basis for this is found in Proverbs 25, verses 21 through 22. And here's what it says. If your enemy is hungry, give him food to eat. And if he is thirsty, give him water to drink. For you will heap burning coals on his head, and the Lord will reward you. This is an absolutely frightening verse, because what it paints a picture of is close proximity between me and the people who have hurt me, between you and the people who have hurt you. And it's one thing to avoid ill will towards people and to not seek revenge against those who have hurt you. It's another to jump in there and give water to an enemy or food to an enemy. In this verse, here's what it's really telling us, that if we want to repair relationships, if we really want to be wise in the context of our relationships, we've got to get to a place where we're actively blessing the people who have hurt us. In fact, Proverbs is implying that until we get to that place, to where we're actively seeking the goodwill of the people who have hurt us, what's really going on in us is we're still being controlled by what people have done to us. We're still defined by what's happened to us, and what's happened to us still has a hold on us. What's being made very clear here is that maybe the only release that you and I can experience from the pain and the hurt and the wrongdoing that we've experienced is by repaying evil with good. And what this means isn't that you march back into that abusive relationship or that dysfunctional scenario. Frankly, there are some relationships where it's not safe for us to go back to. So that's not what this means. What it does mean is a mind shift. It's a shift in mindset to where you're not reducing someone to their smallest, to their biggest mistake. Right? Instead, you're leaving the door open for change. You're allowing God to do something huge in somebody else's life. And here's what it might look like. All you're doing is hoping for the best for them. And you're asking God to bring forth something good in their life. Here's how Paul put it in Romans 12. He said, "Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. Do not repay anyone evil for evil. Try to do what is honorable in everyone's eyes. If possible, on your part, live at peace with everyone. Friends, do not avenge yourselves. Instead, leave room for his wrath. For it is written, 'Vengeance belongs to me. I will repay,' says the Lord. But if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. For in so doing, you will be heaping fiery coals on his head. Do not be conquered by evil, but conquer evil with good." The only antidote to evil is good. The only antidote to getting over and conquering the evil or the wrongdoing that you've experienced in your life is somehow getting to a place where you've forgiven the person to the degree where you can actually start talking to God about them. And when you talk to God about them, you are hurting more for them than you've been hurt by them. And you're proactively seeking their good. So after you've resisted superiority, and you've released liability, and you've begun to repay evil with good, then and only then can you take the next step. And the next step is to confront out of love. Here's what Proverbs 27, verses 5 and 6 say. "Better an open reprimand than concealed love. The wounds of a friend are trustworthy, but the kisses of an enemy are excessive." What's at work here is something that I think it's important for us to see, but it's hard to hear. It's absolutely unloving for us to allow someone who is living in error to continue to do so uninterrupted. It's unloving to allow someone who's mistreating you or other people to continue to go through life that way. It's not loving to them. It's not loving to the people that they're hurting. And frankly, and maybe most importantly, it's not loving to you. And so if confronting someone is the most loving thing that you can do, I have to believe that there's a way that you can go about it. And I think that there is. And I think it's confronting them out of love. And the only way that you're going to get to that place, the only way you're going to confront someone out of love is if you first resisted the notion that you're better than they are. And release them from the liability. And release yourself from the exhausting work that it is to make people pay you back. But you've got to release them from liability and having to pay you back. And you have to get to a place where you're seeking their good. Their good is now a priority in your life on some level. Because if you skip any of those steps, what's going to come across when you get to that confrontation is the fact that you're really still trying to hurt them rather than trying to help them. And they're going to pick up on that, and the wall's going to go higher, and the relational gap is going to get wider, and you're going to be further from relationship repair than you've ever been. And here's what I'm not implying. I'm not implying that everything requires direct confrontation. In fact, there are some people in your life, perhaps, that are not safe to confront. Please don't confront them. There are some relationships that people have been in that are not, it's not time to repair. Maybe it's time to run. Not every relationship can be repaired. But what can always be repaired is the way that you view that relationship. And you can be set free from the hold that maybe that relationship has on you. What Proverbs is really getting at is if there's someone in your life and you see them trapped in an established pattern of behavior, just like an animal caught in a trap, as Galatians 6 puts it, for their sake, for the relationship's sake, for other people's sake, and most importantly, for your sake, it might just be time to speak up and confront them out of love, but not before you've resisted superiority, released them from liability, started seeking their good by repaying evil with good. Now, just like everything else Proverbs has challenged us to do in this series so far, we got these four neat little steps that we briefly talked about. And they are way more difficult than they sound. I'm sure you know that at this point in time. You might even be thinking those four steps sound irrational and impossible, and how could you even say any of that? I'm with you. I want you to think about this for a second, because I'm with you. That's where I'm at. Think about this for a second. And I want you to get as specific as you're willing to. I want you to think about the people, or maybe the person in your life that has caused you the most pain. I want you to think about that person right now. And then I want you to try, just for a second, try not to look down on them for what they've done. Try not to look down on them just for a second. And then consider absorbing the pain. Like, that's what releasing them from liability is. That's you fully absorbing the pain that they've caused you. And Proverbs tells us that if we can do that, it'll set us free, it'll set them free, it'll change our relationships. And then I want you to consider for a moment that not only are you releasing them from liability, now you're going to proactively seek their good by asking God for their good. Look, I'd be a fool if I tried to lead you or myself to believe that this is some like switch that we can flip and we can just all of a sudden decide to do these things. Look, at best, I think the Proverbs that we've looked at today simply show us a strategy that we could potentially implement if we had relationships that we wanted to repair. What they don't do is tell us that we have the power to do it. And you know as well as I do that a strategy without the means by which to execute it is just a waste of time. So the question that's on my mind is, where can we get the power to do this? Where can we get the power to resist superiority and to release liability and to repay evil with good and to confront out of love? Where can we get that power? So take another look at Proverbs 24, 17, and 18. It says, "Don't gloat when your enemy falls, and don't let your heart rejoice when he stumbles, or the Lord will see, be displeased, and turn his wrath away from him." So look, just so we're clear, here's what this doesn't mean. It doesn't mean let go and let God figure it out. God's going to have the final word. There's a guy by the name of Bruce Walk that wrote some commentaries on the book of Proverbs. And he said something that I think is accurate as it pertains to what this proverb actually means. And what he said is that it can't mean that we're supposed to hope that God's wrath falls on the people who have hurt us. And here's why it can't mean that. God's wrath is going to have to fall on me, and it's going to have to fall on you too, because you and I know we've hurt people. We've been hurt, and we've also hurt. And so in that scenario, waiting for God's wrath to fall on the people who have hurt you, in that scenario, nobody wins. Nobody comes out alive. But what it does mean is this, that God is just as angry about my hate and my resentment toward the people who have hurt me as he is about the things that they did to hurt me. That your resentment is just as bad, that your hate is just as bad as the wrong that was done to you in the eyes of God. And frankly, it might even be worse. Because here's the thing, the longer you walk in resentment, the further away from healing you get. And you might be sitting here thinking today, how could he say this? That your resentment or hate doesn't even come close to what you've been through or what people have done to you. But listen to this. Every time you choose to hold a grudge, here's what I think you're ultimately doing. You're assuming the role of God. You're inserting yourself in the storyline in a place that only God fits. Listen to what Paul said in Romans chapter 12. He said it real simply, and he's talking about God here. He says, "Vengeance is mine, says the Lord." And shoot, besides this, it's impossible to think that even for a moment we would get remotely close to understanding all the complex issues and reasons that led someone to treat us so poorly. Look, if you've been treated poorly, take it as this. Something is wrong. Not necessarily with you, but with the person who's treating you poorly. And we don't know what kind of home they grew up in or what they went through or what kind of abuse they endured or what they experienced or who wronged them or what their biggest fears are or what their deepest insecurities are. Only God has that vantage point. And so to insert ourselves in the story as all-knowing and all-seeing and all-understanding and to begin holding people accountable and demanding that they pay a price that you and I, frankly, can't even pay, Proverbs tells us that that's absolutely foolish. And that's why going down that road, it really only ever results in more resentment and a future outlook on people that's built on their past failure. And not only is this offensive to God, but it ruins us and it ruins our relationships. And it perpetuates this cycle, this vicious cycle of retribution. But there is a solution, and the only solution that can break this cycle is found in Jesus. Take a look at Isaiah 53, verses 5 and 6. And here's what it says about Jesus. It says, "But he was pierced because of our transgressions, crushed because of our iniquities. Punishment for our peace was on him, and we are healed by his wounds. We all went astray like sheep. We all have turned to our own way, and the Lord has punished him," that's Jesus, "for the inequity of us all." Look, the only thing that can stop people from trying to take God's place is understanding that God took our place. That's precisely what Jesus did. He took our place. And since Genesis chapter 3, We've been destroying relationships, and it's because we don't have the heart to repair them. So if we want a heart to develop in us that's capable of repairing relationships, that's capable of being wise in relationships, a heart that can resist superiority, a heart that can release people from liability, a heart that can repay evil with good, a heart that can confront people in love with pure motives, we have to understand that that kind of heart comes from Jesus and comes from Jesus alone. It comes from knowing that Jesus didn't look down on us. He was pierced for our transgressions. It comes from knowing that Jesus fully released us from all liability. He was crushed because of our iniquities. It comes from knowing that Jesus fully repaid evil with good. He was punished so that we could have peace, so that we could be fully healed. It comes from knowing that Jesus confronted absolutely everything that has ever wounded us or hurt us or harmed us in such a way as to set us free. So look, if you're here today and you are tired of having to feel superior, look at what Jesus did. Look at what Jesus had to go through for your sins. And I guarantee you, your sense of superiority will die. If you want to release people from liability, see that Jesus paid for you with his life so that you could be released from all liability. And if you want to seek the good of the people who have hurt you, see Jesus welcoming you into God's family, even if it meant that he himself had to be forsaken by God for you. So today we're going to end our service by celebrating communion. And all communion is a visual representation of everything that Jesus endured, the way that his body was broken and his blood was shed, all for the sake of repairing your relationship with God, all for the sake of repairing my relationship with God. And I'm going to ask you to do something. I'm going to ask you to do something extremely specific. And you don't have to do this. You don't have to do this at all, but I'm going to encourage you and ask you to do this one specific thing. As we close with this last song, and maybe before you even come up to this table to take communion, here's what I want you to do. I want you to consider the relationships in your life that you know need repair. I want you to consider those relationships, and I want you to get as specific as you need to. I want you to think of the person. I want you to think of the point of pain. I want you to get as specific as you need to. And then I want you to remind yourself of what Jesus went through to repair a right relationship between you and God. And then I want you to take a moment and ask God, with that person in mind, with that relational pain in mind, I want you to ask God specifically to give you absolutely everything that you need to resist feeling superior to that person, to release that person from all liability and the need or the demand that you have in their life for them to pay you back. And I want you to ask God to give you everything that you need to make their good a priority. And then if necessary, I want you to ask God to show you if it's necessary to confront that person out of love. That's how we can be wise in our relationships. And ultimately, the only way that we get to that place is through Jesus.